I think you also need to know your strengths and weaknesses. And I know with...
But sales is asking questions.
You just got to do it. I mean, you just simply got to ask the questions. What's their kids' names? And, you know...
You're listening to the Roofing Success Podcast, a show created to inspire roofing contractors to achieve optimal success in their roofing businesses. I'm the host, Jim Aline, the co-author of the books Internet Marketing for Roofing Contractors and The Best Known Roofer. I'm also the co-founder of Roofer Marketers, the leading digital marketing agency for the roofing industry. On each episode, I sit down with industry leaders to talk about their processes, the lessons they've learned, and how to find success in roofing.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Roofing Success Podcast. And if you get a chance, hit the like button, comment, leave us a review, follow us anywhere you are. We really, really appreciate it. Today, we have Reno Menapace from Home Value Renovation in Indianapolis, or Indiana, right? Indianapolis Metro, right? Is that where you guys are mainly out of?
That is correct, yeah. Yes.
Awesome, man. How's it going today in the Indy area?
Beautiful day. We got hit with a little bit of hail about a month ago, so we've been extremely busy. So can't complain. Things are good here in Indy.
It's a good kickoff to the season, right? Nice to kick off the season early.
It is. We've had both day years where you struggle to find business, and years like this year where it just comes plenty. You got to get it when it's there. So
I met you out at one of the Job Nimbus events, and one of the things that I talk about at events, when people go to events, is that sometimes the conversations that you have in between sessions, at lunch, at breakfast, in the morning, like have tremendous value on your business. And as you know, there was a couple of times where we were in groups of people talking through the week, and you were one of the people that was like, "Man, that guy is you were contributing." Right. It was like you were trying to help anyone that had a like that was, "Oh, man, how do you do this? Oh, I do it this way." Right. You know, you always had good advice and thoughtful advice. So I was like, "Man, I got to get Reno on the show, man. We got to have some conversations."
Thank you.
So give us a little bit about your background. How did you end up in roofing?
Well, you know, I'm going to take you way back. When I was a kid, I was the shyest kid you'd ever want to meet. I wouldn't talk to girls. My mom was going to offer me $500 to go to prom. I would not do it. I refused. I had a friend in college that I walked on Ohio University football team with, and he said, "You know what you got to do? You just got to learn to say hi to every single person that walks by until you're 100% comfortable with that." It took me about a year or so. I'm an introvert at heart. I did that, and then you start the next step where you had to start a conversation, which I just learned to love people. So I got out of college. I started with a company called Galleons, which is now Dick's Sporting Goods. They have merged. Just felt comfortable in the sales arena there. That led to a career with Australian Gold, where I was the sales manager for the New York, north of there. From there, I started my own footwear company. I was buying shoes from China, selling them here. Bass Pro Shop was our biggest seller in those. Learned to do that business, sold that business probably a year or two late, but I did sell it. After that, went to a career in Angie's List. Didn't love the model at Angie's List. I don't want to talk bad about any company. Just wasn't for me. I didn't understand the value. Made it a tough sell for me. Was contacted by – I was in the gym. I met the owner of our company, which is a person by the name of Mike Redman. And he said, "Well, why don't you just sell roofs?" And I was like, "Roofing? Well, I'm not getting on a damn roof. Those things are steep. And, you know, I was scared of heights. And there ain't no way I'm getting on a damn roof." But – you know, 10 years later, here I am getting up and down the roofs at the age of 51. So still doing it. And I love what I do.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So, I mean, all kinds of great business experience. Building a footwear company, that's something like, to me, that like, and that takes some courage. That seems like a real stretch, man. It's not just like, "Hey, let's go out and sell something." I mean, you got to get all the manufacturing down, get all the design down, then get it to market. Hopefully you're managing your inventory properly and stuff. Like, that's a big feat. What got you in? Like, what, How did that business come about?
You know, in the apparel business, everything's a copy of something else. We found a hot product, tried to make it better. Went to China, I didn't go to China. My business partner did, went to, a lot of expos and said, how can we make a product better? And essentially that's what we did. Had a great, great run, for about 8 years. But everything, has a beginning and an end. And you can't keep doing the same thing over and over again. We're going to put the money in new modeling or molding of the product. So it was time to sell the product and move on. At that time.
And that's an interesting statement. In apparel, everything is a copy of something else. I think that's business too.
Absolutely.
Right. I've heard it described, as early in business, you're kind of trying to mimic, right? You're trying to mimic maybe one of the bigger companies in your area or a company that you worked for in the past, right? You're trying to mimic it. And then you get to a point where you have a solid business running, and then you start to go, oh no, I want to do things this way or that way. And you start to make your improvements. Or, I know a lot of people that start companies in the roofing industry that are like, man, I couldn't stand how the company that I was working for did things. I want to change that. So that seems like, I don't know. It seems to really resonate between the two industries.
It's when I first started in this industry, I always treated my competition as enemies. And I don't know why. And I don't know why I was so competitive, maybe in the sports world. And as I've developed, most of my competition has become my close friends. We talk about business. We talk about everything else. I don't know why I had that mind frame. But now people that do what I do, they're very similar to I am. They're good people. I mean, it's you learn from these people, and it's changed my scope, especially going to things like the event we were at. It's great to network with people, meet people like yourself. You're one of the best listeners I've ever talked to. The ability, and it's such a trait to listen, and I wish I had that. But you're very good at what you do. So,
thank you. That's an interesting thing here. I think that also competition to friends, like there is such an abundance. And I've told this story a few times. I do speaking events for ICO Roofing, ICO Profit Power events. We have one coming up and a couple coming up here in the Cincinnati, Dayton area, and then one out in Denver coming up. But in those events, I remember the Minneapolis event that we did, and I know a lot of the companies because I'm here locally, and I'm looking around the room. I'm like, man, I bet there's $250 million in gross revenue in this room, right?
Huge number.
And this is only the companies that showed up today. This is only the ICO Roof Pros. This is not all of the other, right? Like, there is such an abundance in business and in life, right? There's such an abundance in business and in life. It sounds like you have that, right? Like you have that abundance mindset. How do you translate that into, because you're a sales manager, right? How do you translate that? And how do you transfer that abundance mentality to the sales team?
But it's one thing I always said. We used to do in the footwear industry. We used to sell a lot of our stuff in basically trade shows, and you would have to grab people from an aisle, get them into your booth. I always said I like the shotgun approach rather than the sniper. I mean, I have guys that would close 10 out of 10 foot shoes, and that was great. But I'd rather take the guy that would bring 150 people in the booth and sell 50% of those and sell 75. At the end of the day, I made more money. Networking, it's so important. You've got to be around, talking to people, meeting people, knowing people, getting involved in city councils, things like that, just to meet people. And the more people you know, that makes this job a heck of a lot easier. You ask about their business, they'll ask about yours. And from there, I'd rather be, going downhill than uphill.
Isn't that old saying, your network is your net worth, or something to that effect, right? Like, So that's an interesting thing. You know, you how many sales reps do you guys have now?
We flow between about 13 to 19, depending on the year.
Okay. So, you know, this is it's not for everyone, right? Exactly. It's not a business for everyone.
It's a tough find. It really is. Yes.
So what's your thought process on that? Like, what's your thought process from a sales management perspective of this is what I'm looking for in someone in a new rep? And these are the things, man, these are the qualities that I see that if I can just help mold these certain qualities, they're going to skyrocket.
I think the number one thing I look for in anything is accountability. And I say that with everything. I didn't know that. You hear that as a sales manager all the time. My question is, there's so many avenues to learn this business right now. Your podcast, you can go online, learn about installing a roof. There's so many. It's not the old day where you went to a library and you open a book and find things. You can go on a YouTube and watch a sales video. You can watch how a roof is installed. You can watch how flashing is installed. You can learn anything you want to learn. The responsibility to me, if you take accountability in all your actions, why you missed a sale, why you got a sale, why you didn't sell for a high enough margin, why you actually were successful, and go back and look, and it all stems from my word, which is accountability. Accountability leads to everything else, with trust, you know, understanding, you know, the customer base and so forth. So that's the biggest word I like to see. I know one of the unique things that our principal owner always asks in a job interview, the first question he always asks, is there anything that you think is beneath you? And I always thought that was an interesting, that's the first thing he asked, because, I mean, I've been doing this 10 years, I make a good living, but yes, I have cleaned raccoon poop out of an attic. You know, this job, you got to go knock on somebody's door that probably doesn't want to talk to you. If you're accountable, you look at it. If they say no, you don't get the sale. You got to ask yourself, what could I have done better? And if I see somebody in an interview that, you know, is accountable for everything, that's what I'm looking for.
That's an amazing insight, because accountability is such an important factor, especially in sales, because boy, it's not you're. No matter how much support you have, it's still you against the world, right? Like, it's still, you still got to go out there and make your living. Another thing that I've heard in this and that I feel goes along with it is self-awareness, right? Like, I think that great business owners for sure have a lot of self-awareness. They're like, boy, I'm not good at that. I better find some help, right? There, you know, or I have to go learn this, or I have to go hire someone. In sales, I think that's another thing you had asked, you'd said in a couple of those things, like, well, why didn't I get that sale? Right? Like, are you accountable to it? And are you aware that why? Like, those people were just terrible people, Reno. They just, man, they just didn't get it. They're, you know.
I think you also need to know your strengths and weaknesses. And I know with what I've done, I grew up in the suburbs. I've lived in a city my whole life. I enjoy the city living. In Indianapolis, you get outside the greater Indianapolis area, it's more farmers. It's more, you know, people. And I'm not saying I just don't have as much in common. So what I've done is I've hired a gentleman that grew up in that world that can speak to those people, speak the same language. When I'm on the roof doing the technical stuff, understanding, you know, Xactimate software, he can have that conversation more what they're used to, going to a 4-H festival, stuff I don't know anything about. And, you know, learning your strengths and weaknesses, and sometimes you can work on your weaknesses, but, you know, I'd rather specialize in what I do well at and let people do what I don't do as well, and so forth.
So you're looking for accountability. Like in an interview process, you're looking for accountability, looking for some of those things. What now you bring them on board, what's your philosophy on training and what process do you put in place to get to try to do your best to make that sales rep successful?
You know, product knowledge is one thing, but knowing at the end of the day, no one cares which way the flashing is developed. No one cares, you know, what if they're using copper sulfate in the shingle to get algae. They got to be able to talk to people. Have you ever heard of the I, me, we game or NUS?
I have not.
I play this game, and I don't know if you want me to play with you anymore on a podcast, but I often, because when people start sales, they tend to get nervous. They clam up. There's a game I learned, I think it was a local company here that does sales training. It's called the I, me, we, and I challenge everybody to do this with new reps. And when they get nervous into a facility, you know, when they're going into a house, they're uncomfortable. It's a game where you have a conversation with somebody about your day. And in that conversation, you cannot use the word I, me, we, or us. And you have to have a conversation for a minute. And you realize anytime you feel nervous, anytime you feel you're stressed, the conversation is not going correctly, you're not going to get the sale, is you're using those four words too much. When you make it about the customer, ask them how they're doing. They don't care how you're doing. Ask them how they're doing. Ask them about their kids. Ask them about their day. There's no nerve. I don't have to have product knowledge. I don't have to explain warranty. I don't to have that conversation. And that's what people want to talk about themselves. And I think it's a tremendous thing. I still do sales. And when I say, boy, I'm not going to get the sale, I start questioning in my head, am I talking about myself too much? Am I talking about my business too much? Am I talking about me too much? I'm not talking about them. And if you're not talking about them, you're not getting what they want. You're talking about what you want.
That's amazing. The best conversations, that you'll have, I think I saw this on a podcast one time, where it's a conversation where people just ask you questions about yourself. Like, people love to talk about themselves, right? So in that,
absolutely.
So if you're talking about yourself in a sales situation, you are not winning. You're definitely losing that one, right? Because your customer is who needs to be talking about themselves. So what are some questions that you train on?
It's funny. I'm going to interrupt. One of my reps, I always do this to them, though. I always go, how'd the sales go? And they come back and they go, oh, it went great. And I go, what's their kids' names? And, they're talking about, hey, we did this. We're putting ice and water shield on. They were excited about that. We're not going to stop from this ice damming. At the end of the day, I mean, you could tell somebody what ice and water shield does, how synthetic's better than 15-pound felt. They don't care. I mean, they do to an extent. You'll have that 2% that is the engineering out there that wants to know the details of the job. But realistically, it's more important to know what their kids' names is. I look at pictures. I tell people to look at pictures in the house. What's important to them? They got a dog in picture. Oh, is that your dog? Yeah. Tell me about your dog. And connect that way rather than, talking about you.
I learned this early on in sales, in my first kind of sales training role that I got formally trained on sales. They call it the form method. Have you heard of the
form? We're breaking up.
Have you heard of the form method? FORM?
I have not.
Okay. So this is one of those things. It's a very standard thing in family, occupation, recreation, motivation. So one of the first things I was trained on in sales was that it kind of to what your point is, you're looking at the pictures, you're asking them questions, right? About their family, their occupation, the recreation, and their motivation. And if you have that in mind, you're always talking about them. You're asking them questions about them, right? Like you said, what are their kids' names? Family, right? What do they do for work? Occupation, right? Like, you see a picture, a couple of pictures with some sailboats, like them in front of some sailboats. Oh, they're do you guys go sailing off? Out there in Indy, right? If they got pictures out there at the 500, right? Like, oh, are you guys, you know, is this something you're interested in? Those are some of the things. What other tricks or tips do you give your sales reps to help them get to help them stay focused on that?
You know, again, it's establish that conversation. Tricks, basically ask those questions. I mean, there, and we talked about this at the seminar, you should never have to close a sale. Everything should be done before we even start the presentation. You should know when they want to get a roof, how much they want to spend on a roof, you know, before you even start talking about what you do. Pre-sales. I mean, sales before you even start the sale. You know, you should have 100% knowledge of what the customer wants. And there was a game I saw. We trained under in one of my past companies. A gentleman that worked with Steve Jobs was a sales trainer in there, and I thought it was one of the really riveting. He started a blind presentation. He brought two sales reps up to the front of the seminar, and he handed them. Everybody knew the script. There's a gentleman that wanted to join a gym because he had diabetes. He's multi-million dollars. And what these two of these sales reps did was they went and asked the initial question, you know, hey, what brings you in today? And, well, you know, I want to start a gym. And they start blabbering. They just, you know, we do this. We got the best price. We got this. We got that. Without asking the next question, then the next question. Oh, you know, why do you want to belong to the gym? And that's the next question. Well, you know, my doctor told me I need to come in here. Well, why did your doctor tell you to come in here? Because I have a diabetes. Oh, does that run in the family? You know, is it something? What specific does he want you to do in training? Get to the what they want on the core, just like in roofing. Why? I ask every time I walk into point, why am I here? And you ask that simple question, you're going to get everything you need to know why you're there. You're going to, they'll blabber, you know, the customer will tell you when they're buying a roof, they have a leak, the roof's too old, the insurance is going to cancel them unless they get a new roof. You'll know your timing, when you need to, you know, when they need to do it. You meet their needs, because at the end of the day, maybe they just don't like the color. You know, that's what you need to focus on. You know, so there's so many different things you need to get out of that customer before you even start talking about yourself.
I love that. Why am I here? Right? Like, what are we doing here? What's going on? How are we, you know, what problem are you really that the question of that is, what problem are you looking to solve? Without asking them what, you know, but without identifying that problem. And without identifying what they feel will solve that problem, then you're out of the game right away, right? So as a sales rep, man, I have 9-year-old twin boys. And if you ask them, what is sales? They'll tell you asking questions. That's the only thing they know, asking questions. What if you ask them? I've trained them on it. Like, I haven't trained them on what questions to ask, but sales is asking questions. That's all it is. And the more you understand about the problem that the customer is facing in any industry, right? The better you can present your solution. If you have the right solution. Because there's another thing right there, right? If you don't have the right solution to their problem, but you're going to sit in their house for 2 hours without knowing you don't even have the right solution, right? If you're an asphalt shingle, only residential asphalt shingle roofer, and they want standing seam, and you didn't know that, you're out. You could spend as much time with them as you want. You'll never get, you can ask them for the sale. You can ask closing questions. You could, but you'll never get the sale because you don't have the solution to their problem. How does someone develop that? I heard it recently in terms of, you start off with what's the way to put it? Like you're ignorant and incompetent, right? You don't know what you don't know. you don't know anything, right? And you're just going out there and you're kind of throwing things at the wall. And then once you put the reps in and really develop your skill set as a salesperson, it's a competence. You have competence and you are and it's just on autopilot, right? Like you don't even think about it anymore. How does one get from learning how to ask those questions, having to really like be thoughtful, like, oh, I have to ask these five questions. Maybe they got some notes in their pocket, right, that they're looking at, right? Like I have to make sure I ask these questions. What's the path to just getting to the point where it just flows naturally?
I think I go back to the initial conversation where you just had to say, when I was a shy kid, I just had to go back and say hi to everybody. You just got to do it. I mean, you just simply got to ask the questions. A couple things that I've done recently that I think have been very helpful for me. We all know we've been into sales presentations that we know we're not going to close. The person doesn't have enough money. It's just not the right timing. In that situation, what I've started recently is doing things I'm uncomfortable with. The experience in that. Ask questions I normally wouldn't ask. I'm not a hard closer. Don't think I need to be. Increasing the pricing way more than I thought I should be until I'm comfortable offering an extra $50, $100 per square. Because the more you do it, the easier it becomes. Then you go to the next house that is a buyer. You're used to doing increasing the sales. You're used to the pricing, asking the more more difficult questions. You know, hey, I when people say, hey, I can't afford this. And you say, is it the cost? Is it the cost or the price? And you go, you know, it's somewhat confrontational when asking that question, but the more you do it, the timing becomes better, the flow becomes better. You do it with a smile. They get on your side, and they'll tell you again everything you need to know. Well, what's that mean? Cost or price? And then you go right into sometimes I draw a graph and I talk. Hey, this is our price. This is their price. Well, if you ice dam in 5 years and we got to replace the roof, and before you know it, on their side, on one side of the ledger, it's twice as much as yours. And then you ask the question, is it cost or price that you're looking for? And, I think a lot of experience, but you have to fail, and you got to know when you fail to succeed, because you'll ask questions the wrong time, the wrong question. I did that the other day. I over-talked a customer that I said was too expensive, and I was talking about inflation. He knows there's inflation. And I'm going to myself, what the hell am I doing? Why am I going into a rant on inflation when I should be asking, you know, tell me about it. You know, what were you expecting to spend? What's in your budget? You know, and you got to catch yourself and you got to be able to fail and move forward.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. There's a point when you do this, you know, in sales or in learning any skill in life. There's a point where you don't even know you're saying the wrong thing at the wrong time or doing the wrong thing at the wrong time and other things, right? Then you move into that like, oh my goodness, why did I say that? That was so dumb. Right. And so you know that you were supposed to do so, or man, why'd I do it that way? I should have done it that way. And then pretty soon it flows. But even when it flows, you know, Michael Jordan had a bad day. You know what I mean? But you just didn't see it as easily. Right. But after every game, Kobe would, you know, go back and go nuts on how, you know, like he might have scored 60 points, but he was mad that he didn't get that rebound, right? Like you have to be aware of all of the things that you're doing on an ongoing basis.
I think in the sales market arena too, I think we've all experienced this. We go through times where we think, boy, I'm closing everything I touch. And then we go, boy, I can't close crap right now. And you have to evaluate. And I've gone through a cycle about a couple weeks ago, like, boy, I've been on five bad calls, inspectors not buying. What am I doing different right now? What was I doing more successful? And then I go back and I said, boy, I'm rushing to get to that next sale. The most important person is the person in front of my face. And I'm rushing to get to that next sale because my goal is here and I need to get all this done. and I just needed to slow down. And, you know, you got to self-evaluate. One sale will lead to two sales. The networking, you know, networking, you put a roof on, you should be getting two to three at least sale from that roof going on. And slow down, be on the project, go talk to the neighbors. I'm so busy running to the next thing or running to the next thing. And I realized I got to slow down again. I started slowing down. I said, hey, go to the neighbor's house. Hey, we're getting debris in your yard. I terribly apologize. Randy's put a roof on. Yeah, well, he is, you know, insurance bought him a new roof and so forth. And he had a lot of hail damage from the hailstorm a week ago. Do I have damage? You know, you go right into that mindset, slow down. And that's one thing I always catch myself. I got to slow down. You know, you got to enjoy what you do, because I have no problem working all night. If I got an appointment at 3 a.m., I'm doing it. I love it, you know, so forth. Yeah. So
how it made me think of like, what does success look like to a rep? How do you help them? How do you help them like understand what they can't, like what their goals are, what they're trying to accomplish during that year?
You know, it's tough. I think the number one thing, if they enjoy the business and they enjoy what they do, they're going to be successful. I've had careers where Angie's List, I didn't enjoy it. I wasn't successful. If they enjoy it, they're going to learn it. And you got to present something for your sales team that they enjoy doing, whether money motivated, they just like meeting people. I mean, no one likes putting a 75-pound bundle on their shoulder and carrying up a 12-12 pitch. But this job can be a lot of fun. It really can. The people I've met are, you know, some of my best friends. Customers have taken me boating while we're doing the roof. My customers have become my friends. If they like that system where they can meet a lot of people, establish that networking, they're going to eventually love it. But, you know, answering your question more specifically, you know, you got to find out what your reps want out of life. I mean, are they in a financial bind? Is it a financing thing? They just hated being behind, just like when you ask questions, they hated being behind an office, a cubicle. They just want to be outside. And you cater to what your reps like. The value of a good sales rep is priceless. This is a hard industry to find people that can do what we do. And you have to be multiple talented. I was joking with one of the guys I sells with the other day. Well, you know, of all the qualifications you need to be a good sales rep, and we were joking, well, you got to be able to lift 75 pounds. You can't be afraid of height. You got to be able to do collections. You got to be able to talk to a customer. It helps to know Spanish. I mean, so, you know, and I was saying, how are we going to find that person? But at the end of the day, this industry, you can make a lot of money in. And I know sales reps in other industries, and, you know, they get excited about X amount of dollars. This industry, for an average sales rep, if you're doing it right and working with a decent company, you should be making three times what an average sales reps or more they make. Yes, it can be difficult. Yes, it can be fun. But I think everybody in this industry that's done it well lives a pretty darn good lifestyle.
That's for sure. Do you think that the best reps have some sort of financial motivation to them?
Absolutely.
Like that they have to be financially motivated in some way?
I'm going to put it a different way. They have to win. I mean, they have to be competitive.
Competitive.
You know, we do sales boards in our company, where you are, you know, this person's at 2.5, you're at 2.3 for the year. And we get prizes, you know, for who wins. At the end of the year, it's not how much money am I making on a sale. We want to win the year. We do one thing where we go to Ruth Chris, and, you know, if you sell under $1 million a year, we'd have a Christmas party. You get chop steak right there in front of your wife or girlfriend while everybody else is eating the T-bone or the tomahawk ribeye. And you got to explain to your girlfriend or why you're eating chop steak when the person next to you is eating that tomahawk ribeye. I think that was, you wouldn't imagine at the end of the year, just the embarrassment alone. It's not, you know, just eat that chop steak or the hamburger where everybody else is getting, you know, a 4,000 calorie steak. So yes.
And that'll filter the people who are competitive or not.
Yes.
Right. Like Boy, and what are some other things that maybe things that you gamify to help foster that competitiveness?
I we don't do this per se, but I know a lot of companies, a lot of friends I'm interested, you know, top three salespeople get a trip to Cancun or something like that. But you got to ask your staff. I mean, because we have a staff that's interested. They're big time in hunting. So I don't hunt. I don't understand hunting, but they love that. So, you know, they go on these hunting excursions or whatever, you know, and so forth. So you got to find out what they're interested in. And maybe their love is hunting. Maybe their love loves fishing. So top three reps will go on this fishing excursion. So different things you can motivate the staff that don't really cost a whole lot of money. You know, we don't necessarily, we're not the company that's going to give bonuses to anything. We think we pay well, you know, across the board. Our reps probably make, you know, way more than any other company out there. But that's typically in the hiring process that we see that competitive side. And if we don't see it, it's probably not going to be a good fit.
I think that, you had mentioned like the opportunity, the financial opportunity is like three times what other industries are on average, right? How do you help motivate your sales team, or how could a salesperson think bigger, like really understand the opportunity that's in front of them?
It's tough. And I think the younger population, it's even tougher. And I think we talked a little bit about that, me and you personally, at an earlier base. You know, I don't own this company. I've owned companies in the past. We've talked about that and why I don't want to own a roofing company. But if I need something, I buy it. If I have, you know, my midlife crisis Jeep with the doors off, tube doors, high wheels, everything else, everything I want, I get. And I, you know, when I go on a trip, I get the suite now. When I took my son to professional wrestling last night, we were in the front row. If you want that lifestyle, not everybody wants that lifestyle. You're going to have to work for it. But that's, you know, people, I have no problem people bringing in the place where I live. They see how I live, my customer lifestyle, and they might want to say, I want that. If they don't want that, you know, there might be other jobs out there, desk jobs that have standard salaries. I think anybody on a commission-based salary isn't typically a competitive person that is confident in what they do. And if not, you know, again, this job's not for everybody.
I have found over just in my life experience that I've had some times of reflection where I look back at certain jobs that I was doing, or, you know, I was mostly in sales, and I thought, man, there were times in my life where I made myself say that I was content with certain things.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Like I think that we can trick ourselves into contentment. And to be, hey man, I'm good with what I have. Yep. Like I'm, you know, I have a, you know, I live in a nice neighborhood. I have, you know, like I think that we can trick ourselves into that contentness and demotivate ourselves. But we have, but inside of many of us is the skill set to have the higher level things, right? Like to have a higher level of success.
I think you need something. I think you need something individually to look forward to. There has to be a goal. And I almost do it, you know, you can't compare one year to another year, especially in a hail market. But last year I want to take my son to Italy. I want to do the whole thing. I knew it was going to be expensive. So I told myself I better work a little bit harder to get this done. And I didn't want to stay at the, you know, the small little bed and breakfast that, you know, I wanted to stay at the nicest places. You know, I told myself this year, I you know, in our market, January is not a busy month. I want to go experience Bali. I want to spend the whole month there. I know it's going to cost a little bit of money, but I don't want to stay in. If I have a good year, I want to stay in the presidential suite. You know, and if I don't have that goal, which there's years I haven't had that goal, there's look, my cars are paid for, my place is paid for. You know, I don't need to make any money, but you have to have something for me to look forward to. A realistic goal, you know, in this industry, it doesn't take a whole lot to make an extra $20,000-$30,000. That might be 1-2 sales. Go out and get those 1-2 sales. You know, it could be, you know, one of the guys I work with, he wants to get his student loans, his kids' student loans paid off. And he's going to work his ass off till those loans get paid off. The question is, what comes after that for that person? Is he done? Or is it the next thing he's looking forward to? Is it a, you know, whatever that might be, a house, you know, a house in Florida, and a condo in Florida, whatever that might be, there has to be something to look forward to. If there's not, I mean, you might as well stay home, play video games and live off, you know, old referrals and not make a whole lot of money.
I love that. You have to have something to look forward to. So, you know, for someone that has a hard time, like, determining that, what advice would you give them?
Reach down. What is your headache? What makes you lose sleep at night? And can money solve that problem?
So start there. Like you said, like the student loans or something like that. Like, sure. Start with that.
Correct.
I heard it from you. It's like taking your son on this trip. Maybe that's like a, you know, there it's having these, it's dreams, right? Like, oh, having sure. these, like it's full. Putting dreams in place and then actually attaining those dreams. Like, and then that's the kind of thing with sales, right? The more success you have, the more success you have.
Right? Exactly. Like, it rolls. When it rolls, it rolls.
It's always what the, your conversion rate or your, you know, your conversion rate on a sale after you just made a sale is always higher, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the confidence is up and it's,
that's right. So what advice, what final advice could you give for people, you know, if they want to succeed in sales?
Know why you're in sales and know what you're trying to achieve. And if you love the business, learn the business. And what I mean by that, it's great to listen to tunes in the car. I mean, I love 80s music. I can throw on some 80s music. Listen to Jim's podcast. Listen to Art of Closing by Brian Tracy. Go back to old Zig Ziglar. Listen to his stuff. Continue to train, and be willing to get uncomfortable. Get to the places that make you uncomfortable and practice with them. Because if you do it enough, just like swimming, when the first time you went in the water, it was uncomfortable. Now people dive in, don't think about it, and they take the strokes and they swim. Continue to do it till you're comfortable. Challenge yourself to get in the uncomfortable world, to go and get a guy off a lawnmower and ask him, hey, how was that hailstorm last night? You know, go knock on a front door. Don't be afraid to say, you know, rejection is part of the game. You know, don't let it kill you. Learn from it.
Awesome, man. Thanks for your time today, Marino. Awesome. This has been another episode of the Roofing Success Podcast. If you would like to generate more revenue through your digital marketing efforts, please visit roofermarketers.com to get a copy of the book, The Best Known Roofer. Also, check the training section of the website for guides on everything from running effective pay-per-click ads to how to properly set up your Google My Business listing. Thanks for listening.